KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Near East Ridge.
Sunset. East Side, San Francisco.
Coming up, we'll learn about one Oakland educator's passion project to take African-American youth to South Africa.
Not only do they get to, like, understand languages and how you communicate, but they also get to understand politics and social norms.
Then we'll hear how the Golden State Warriors are leading a new wave of athlete activism in America.
Sports have always been kind of the battleground for activism, but it's always been somewhat muted.
And we'll meet a teen activist who's already getting local politicians on his team.
I can't wait for him to sit in my office. I mean, like, being the mayor.
That's coming up on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Next Tuesday, more than 30 students from Oakland will get on a plane for South Africa. Most are Oakland teens, all but one of them African American. They're part of a group called Culture Keepers. To prep, they've been delving into their own genealogy, learning a few Zulu dances and songs in the Sotho language. They'll be meeting up with a group of South African youth and traveling for 2 weeks. Some of the Oakland students have never been on a plane. The goal is to give them the travel bug for life and teach them about South African culture, but mostly to help them know themselves. It's founder Karishi Wigginton's third year pulling this trip together. KALW education reporter Lee Romney is here with me to introduce us to her and some of the kids who'll be heading out on this adventure next week. Hey, Lee.
Hi there.
So it sounds like to understand what this trip is about, we really need to know more about Karishi. Who is she?
Yeah, so Karishi's parents were really big into Pan-Africanist values when she was a kid. She grew up in Southern California, so she was really steeped in South African culture. Mm-hmm. And she apparently even had these pet parakeets. Their names were Winnie, Nelson, and Soweto. So, and her heroes were human rights icons like Steve Biko. She's a dancer and a poet, and she runs youth programs for the nonprofit Alternatives in Action out of West Oakland's McClymonds High School. Mm-hmm. So I caught up with the Culture Keepers group a couple Saturdays ago when they were prepping for their trip at the school's tech center. They were starting out by doing a bonding exercise about who they are, what makes them feel loved, and how they give love. And Karishi went first.
I always want to be the person for young people that I needed when I was in high school. And so that's what people always talk about, like how much I show up. But like, that's why I'm gonna give you rides all over Tarnation, even though I really don't want to. Or just do whatever it takes, because I want young people to know that they have somebody that they can count on. So that's
Karishi. What made her decide to start taking people to South Africa from Oakland?
I think the seed got planted in 2014. Then that year, she took a group of 18 students on a road trip to Mississippi for the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer.
A road trip.
Yeah, they drove. Mm. They actually drove. She worked with two nonprofits to do that. And the students really got steeped in the civil rights movement, and they were able to relate it to their own experiences. And Karishi had been to South Africa. And when she went, she was really impacted by how resilient and socially aware and also self-aware the South African youth were. She wanted her kids to experience that, too. So in 2015, she organized the first South Africa trip for 10 girls from McClymonds High, and some hadn't traveled beyond the Bay Area. Here's Karishi again.
When youth get to travel, not only do they get to, like, understand languages and how you communicate with people who are different than you, but they also get to understand currency and exchange rates and politics and social norms, and they learn how to code switch and fit in, and they learn mostly about themselves, what makes them tick, what makes them hurt, what makes them happy.
So, Lee, this is the third year for this trip. How has it changed?
This year, she's taking about 30 students, and some of those are mentors. So they're students who have been on the trip before. The kids are from more schools, McClymonds, Castlemont, and Skyline High, one student from Oakland Tech, and some from a smattering of other schools, including one sixth grader from a private school. Mm-hmm. They're going to tour Johannesburg, visit a high school in Soweto, and attend an African naming ceremony. They go on a safari, and they do some other fun stuff like go to a water park. But the really cool thing is it's a cultural exchange with young people from rural Kwaka, which was a homeland that was granted self-governance in 1974. And after apartheid was abolished 2 decades later, it was reincorporated into South Africa. Mm-hmm. So those are super rural kids. And some of those kids have never even been to Johannesburg, which is South Africa's biggest city,
right.
Or met an American. And most have never met African-American students their own age. Mm-hmm. So it's really a true exchange. And this year, they're also, the kids are going to be doing interviews with Joburg residents and creating some audio and video projects.
That sounds like an amazing experience. It also sounds like it costs a lot of money. Where are they getting their funding from?
Well, yep, it is expensive. They have been doing grassroots fundraising and getting a little bit at a time, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of small donations from car washes, selling T-shirts, but they've only met about a third of their $60,000 goal so far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how have the students been preparing for this?
They actually spent a bunch of time at the Family History Center at the Mormon Temple learning about themselves, mm-hmm. digging into genealogy so they can know themselves better.
Right. So let's meet some of these students.
This is the youngest kid who's going on the trip, 11-year-old Samadi Scott.
Uh-huh.
He's an honor roll student at Eliomede, which is an African-centered private school in Oakland.
I learned that, like, my grandpa, my great-grandpa on my grandpa's side, he owned a farm and he had, like, 20 children that sharecropped it and stuff.
You didn't know that before?
No.
It's empowering to learn that kind of information about their own history.
Yeah, it has been super empowering for these kids, and some of them are deepening that exploration by taking it a step further. And one of them is 16-year-old Antoine Adams from Skyline High School.
Well, I took a DNA test, and I'm like 5% South African, so when I go there, like, I'm learning about 5% more about myself. It's just going to be a big connection between me and the South Africans.
What was the rest? Like, was it a surprise?
I was 21% Nigerian, 5% Benin Togo, and 15% European, and 2% Asian.
So they're going with all of this very personal knowledge about themselves. What else are they doing to get ready?
Well, the day I visited, they were learning a famous anti-apartheid protest song. The Culture Keepers got off to a bit of a slow start.
2, 4. Uta, uta, matua,
but soon they were rocking it pretty hard. They're leaving on Tuesday.
All right, thanks, Lee. You can learn more about Culture Keepers at our website, kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. And if there are any education stories you think Lee should cover, email her at education@kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Last week, Golden State Warriors head coach Steve Kerr attended a town hall meeting at Newark Memorial High School to talk about gun control.
I'm here because I'm a citizen of this country and we're a democracy. Let's see if we can do something about it. Let's save some lives.
Kerr and the Warriors have been part of the current rise of activism in American professional sports. But that's nothing new to Warriors community ambassador O'Donnell Foyle. He was drafted by the team back in 1997 after growing up in the Caribbean. He played for the Warriors for a decade, and during that time, he founded Democracy Matters, a national student organization that works to get private big money out of politics. He sat down recently with KALW's Ben Trefney to discuss the rise of political activism among pro athletes.
So there has been a new political awakening for athletes and for young people. Both are close to your heart, and I'd like to start with sports. I'm wondering, what do you see happening right now with athletes raising their political voices?
I think we're in a defining moment in our country. Sports have always been kind of the battleground for activism, but it's always been somewhat muted. And I think what you're seeing is that the convergence of these things where the world is getting incredibly smaller with the advent of social media, and players and are engaging in that world at a level that we haven't seen before.
So how have the Golden State Warriors been part of this? Because they've actually been, you know, one of the more vocal sports organizations in the U.S.
And I think that part of that is starts at the top. I mean, when you look at Steve Kerr, I mean, he has been around the league for a very long time. His parents was activists. And it's not surprising then that he has created an environment where players are feel free to kind of say what they feel, but be responsible to own up, you know, to doing the research necessary before they speak. So I think that what you're seeing is that what he's doing is not telling them not to speak. What he's doing is saying you have a responsibility to know what you're talking about when you do open your mouth. And you've seen that from him. He has modeled, I think, that behavior in many ways. But I think you also live in the Bay Area where we've always had activism. And if you can't be a part of this community and not somehow drawn to that level of engagement that we see from our communities at our level.
Well, so this is, like you said, it's kind of a moment for athletes to take on this role as activists, as they did at different points in history. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But what do you think the impact is then when you have athletes who are speaking out on social rights issues or gun control or the presidency when in the past these people are selling Nikes or Adidas or something like that? And so that role and what they're actually selling is a lot different.
I will say that there is a distinction. I think that when you have a player that has been marginalized their entire life and now they've been given access to great wealth, I don't think that that player is necessarily or should feel guilty about the wealth that they inherit. But the question is, how do you use that platform that you have in order to have a larger conversation? They have incredible stories, life stories that they're bringing with them. They don't kind of put that aside in the locker and then, you know, have these conversation because of the sneakers rights or how much money they're going to make an endorsement. I think what you're seeing is that when you talk about guns, they have experience with guns. When you're talking about poverty, they have experience with poverty. And I think now what you're seeing is that players are saying, look, I'm leaving people behind in order to be successful, but I'm not going to forget them.
So let's talk about one of these guys who you work with at the Warriors is Kevin Durant, because he actually just put a lot of money back into his community where he came from in Washington, D.C., dropped $10 million back to a place where he grew up actually in quite a lot of poverty himself.
And I think that that's part of the interesting part of where we are as an organization and as a brotherhood is that we are understanding in fundamental ways that in order to transform, you know, our communities, that we have to get directly involved and that we have to put money to it as well. And because a lot of what we've seen as players is that we are now creating what I call a pull effect, where almost every player in professional sports to some degree has a foundation. And what we have to start learning how to do is how to really pull those resources together and really start thinking about how to transform not just one place, but a community. And you've seen LeBron has been very, very active as well in LeBron James, ensuring that kids have access to going back to college. I mean, so, you know, I've been looking a lot at different athletes and their foundation, and you're seeing them focus on a few areas, which is really empowering the youths, giving them access to education, and ensuring that they're safe communities. And so I think once you start seeing that more and more players are beginning to think more like business people rather than just go back and do a camp, they're now saying, what is going to have the long-term impact? So they're being much more sophisticated business people in the charity space. And I think that has been very, very helpful.
So how is that different or the same to when you were playing? Because your playing days were mostly like late 90s and the aughts.
I think it's more of an emerging, right? So, I mean, the foundation role has changed, but I think more so that players are instead of being reactive, like, oh, let's, you know, I have somebody in my family who have diabetes, so let's do something about diabetes. I think now what you're seeing, they're much more strategy, because I think now is that foundation is more than just giving money. I think it's a vehicle for players to really speak about what they care most about. And it becomes an integral part of who they are, part of the branding part. So it's not just something you do on the side to, I think, get tax breaks. I think you've seen players really invest in the community in a way, not just in financial resources, but also being there and being part of the renaissance.
I'm really intrigued by that idea of the pool also. And I have to think that just in the same way that people can stay connected with their community because of social media now as compared to back, you know, 15, 20 years ago, also that's a way that the players are staying connected a whole lot better. And then they can talk about, hey, let's make sure to put some attention on school safety right now, or let's make sure to put a little bit of political pressure on this issue right now.
And there is also that instant effect, right? So if Laura Ingraham says something about LeBron, it's no longer you have to wait and read it in the paper. It's instantaneous.
Yeah.
And like because everybody is on social media, you can have and build a campaign in a lot quicker way to counter. So, but I think that the part of the narrative that we're seeing is that there is this really, really close connection between players. They, me, not like each other on the court, but they somehow manage to hang out with each other, talk to each other in a way that I've never seen before. Like, you know, you talk to the players on your team, but I still feel a little bit bizarre about that because I just wanted to punch everybody that I was playing against, and now as everybody wants to talk to them. So I don't know how I feel about that. I'm like, why are they going on vacation? They should want to beat each other up. And they're having conversation about saving the wall, investment strategies, things that we would not have crossed and shared with each other in my day. But it started to see, I think, around...
Well, the money's different too.
The money is certainly different. But I think the environment is different, most importantly, is that there has been an onslaught of assault and what people believe is traditions and norms. And I think that has a lot to do with how players are responding as well.
That was longtime Golden State Warrior and current team community ambassador Adonal Foyle talking with KALW's Ben Trefney. That interview was produced by Beau Walsh. You can learn more about his organization, Democracy Matters, and find an extended version of that conversation we just heard at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. This next story comes from a collaboration between KALW and Oakland Voices, a 9-month program that trains East Bay residents to tell the stories of their neighborhoods. We paired Oakland Voices reporter Deborah Gordon with KALW's Truk Nguyen to answer a question from our crowdsourced journalism project, Hey Area. A resident of East Oakland asked, "Can we showcase students who are making a difference in the neighborhood?" Here's the story of one student.
At City Hall in downtown Oakland, a crowd of about 50 protesters, mostly teens but also some elders, have gathered for a Youth Versus Coal march. They're there to protest a proposal to transport coal through West Oakland. Ivan Garcia is one of the youth speakers giving testimony.
Speak the facts!
Not only is this an environmental injustice, this is a human rights injustice.
Ivan is in his comfort zone speaking out. Not only is he involved with this coal protest, but he is also active in movements to combat youth homelessness and environmental degradation.
We're not crazy. We're just trying to breathe out here.
Ivan also has his own YouTube channel, which ranges from teenage antics to political statements like "Dear Mr. Trump," which he made with his 8th grade class immediately after the election. He says he's the first in his family to get involved with issues like this.
My mom is not into politics. No one in my family, not that I know of, truly has a big passion for politics. And so for me, it's been this really exciting journey to really immerse myself into something so new to me.
And Ivan makes it a priority to participate in youth-led movements like this Youth Versus Coal March today.
I fell in love with what they were trying to do. And I especially enjoyed how everything was youth-led there.
We have new ideas, we see things in new ways, and we inspire older people, whether you believe it or not.
Having youth in our day-to-day life is one of my big things.
Michaela, she planned this whole thing, and we got a bunch of adults out here. She inspired them to come.
So if we can organize specifically as young people, that's definitely a big thing for me.
This past year, Mayor Libby Schaff appointed Ivan to the Oakland Youth Advisory Commission of the City Council, where he's a part of the Environmental and Sustainability Committee. Mayor Schaff actually shows up at the end of the coal rally.
We are fighting this atrocity in court.
She's a big fan of Ivan's.
Oh, I love Ivan. I can't wait for him to sit in my office. And I mean, like, in the desk, being the mayor. He's going to be an amazing mayor. And maybe you're going to bring your talents to some better pursuit besides politics. Whatever it's going to be amazing. And you always do it, Ivan, with love and respect.
The impact of coal on the health of the community, homelessness, the environment, are all vast and substantial issues for anyone to add to their civic work. But imagine if you had algebra homework and a term paper on top of that. Ivan is still just a high school freshman. Even at school, he walks his talk. He's an ambassador for Literati, an organization that's created an app to, quote, clean up the planet one piece of litter at a time.
So I see a plastic cup that once had yogurt in it. So the first thing you do is you open up the Literati app, and then you take a picture of the piece of litter that's on the ground. And then in a couple of hours, you'll see your picture on the Literati map.
Ivan explains that you tag the litter by type or brand name, which creates a digital landfill. The collective data can help companies find more sustainable approaches.
This is the fun part, actually making the change and recycling it.
Ivan attends Head Royce, a private school in the Oakland Hills. He transferred from public school, and in some ways, it's been a challenging transition.
To say it bluntly, a lot of people here come from privilege, and so I don't necessarily come from privilege. A lot of kids here, sometimes they focus on where they're going to go for the summer, if they're going to go around the world, or if they're going to stay local. And for me, that's not necessarily an option.
But he says that while it's difficult to navigate high school at first,
once you find the right people and the right things that interest you, it's definitely an amazing experience that just allows different opportunities to come your way.
Ivan says his family is a big reason he can be so active in his political and social work while still being in high school.
I got really blessed that I have such an amazing family that can support me in everything I do and will support me, that if it wasn't for them actually pushing me and encouraging me and telling me that I can do what I want to do, I wouldn't be where I am today.
He says they also inspire him.
One of the biggest reasons that I have been so involved and wanted to make my community proud is because my mom and my grandma actually immigrated here when she was a little girl. And so my aspirations are to make my family proud. And so all of the things I do are obviously to give my sister a better life and to create more meaningful social change in my community.
As the protesters start to leave the Youth Versus Coal rally, Ivan's mom and little sister arrive to pick him up.
My name's Laura Garcia. I just got here.
Got here kind of late.
Ivan's pursuits keep his mom busy, and after a long week working in a recycling center in Hayward, she tries her best to keep up.
It's hard, you know, because sometimes I plan something. He's like, oh, no, I can't make it, or, you know, I have to do this. And I'm like, what? But, you know, I cancel my stuff for his because I like it that he's involved, because I was never like that.
Laura says she's learned a lot through the political work of her son.
He teaches me a lot of laws, a lot of things that I didn't know, like stuff about Oakland. He loves Oakland, of course. You know, I was raised in Oakland, too. So he teaches me a lot, and his sister. He's always looking out for his sister.
Ivan is already inspiring the next generation of activists. His 9-year-old sister, Evaneth, thinks his work is really cool, too.
Well, I want to follow his footsteps. It makes me feel like he's important and he's involved in stuff. It's just really incredible.
So what happens now, after a day of school and marching against coal coming to West Oakland? Ivan's going to go home and do his homework. And like any other growing teenager, according to his mom,
he's probably going to be hungry.
In Oakland, I'm Deborah Gordon for Cross Currents.
That story was produced as a collaboration between our Hey Area crowdsourced journalism initiative and the community media training program Oakland Voices. It was recently presented as part of our live event, Sights and Sounds of East Oakland. Look out for the next live Sights and Sounds coming at you in mid-May at Red Bay Coffee in Fruitvale. And that's Cross Currents for today. Our team includes Janae Darden, Nina Gensler-Debs, Raquel Maria Dillon, Lisa Morehouse, Andrew Seltzer, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Arpej. They're a local ensemble playing contemporary classical Persian music. They perform at the Red Poppy Art House in San Francisco Friday night. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.